I'm here with Esther Crane, author of the new book and the fantastic box set with stereoscopic pictures, New York City in the Gilded Age. Ms. Crane is a native New Yorker, editor, and writer. She also runs the website Ephemeral New York under the tagline, Chronicling an Ever-Changing City Through Faded and Forgotten Artifacts. Thank you so much for talking with Angry History today.
Thank you guys for coming down.
Now, you've been kind enough to spare some time with us today right before your official book launch. We're in the basement of the Museum at Eldridge Street on New York's Lower East Side, which is inside a 126-year-old synagogue built in 1887. And you can learn more about this place, by the way, at eldridgestreet.org. How did you choose this spot for your party?
Well, as a New Yorker, I've always loved coming down here. The Eldridge Street Synagogue is a real treasure, a little New York gem. It's a beautiful, restored synagogue building. And just being here, you feel the ghosts of old New York. And I happened to get a message from someone from the museum who told me that she really enjoyed the website, Ephemeral New York, that I produce. So the next time I came down here, I sought her out and we talked for a long time. And the idea to hold the book launch was born. We both thought it was just a really appropriate, inspiring venue.
There was a story last week, actually, about the museum at Eldridge Street. And the New York Times had a funny line that I wrote down. Quote, when visitors ask why a great synagogue was built in the middle of Manhattan's Chinatown, it is clearly time for a history lesson. Tell us what it was like back in the Gilded Age to be in this neighborhood. Quite different, right?
Very different. I mean, you can see by the tenements surrounding the synagogue that this was one crowded neighborhood. And you just imagine that each one of those tenements, each apartment, say, you know, the couple of apartments at least per floor, had huge families of immigrants. And you can imagine how many people were hanging out the windows and in the streets. And the synagogue was probably actually a nice little break from tenement life. It's very spacious, and it's a very inspiring place to be.
And this was also just recently redone and kind of in the spirit of the tenement museum that's not far away. And you were talking about some of the tenement reform acts, because originally the tenement was built as kind of the ideal modern urban living. And then when you look at some of the pictures here that you compiled with the New York Historical Society for New York City in the Gilded Age, you kind of get an idea that it was a rough time to live.
Oh, yeah. And people don't realize that the landlords charged a lot of money to live here. I mean, they knew that there were immigrants pouring in that needed places to live, and they took advantage of that. Wasn't cheap to live in a tenement, but what you got for your money was pretty bad. They were grimy, they were dark, they were damp, they were dirty. Life was not easy in a tenement apartment. If you had an outside-facing window, you were lucky. If you had your own water closet in the actual tenement and not an outhouse out back, that would be a plus, too. It wasn't until the New Law Tenement Act was passed in 1901 that reforms came in. Things like all apartments had to have an outside-facing window and get fresh air and light, and every apartment had to have its own bathroom.
Now, you said that the book, New York City in the Gilded Age, was inspired by Ephemeral New York. I signed up for those emails probably as soon as you launched it in 2008, and we tweet out every one of your stories at Angry History. It's that good. You just got on Twitter, I think, fairly recently, at Ephemeral NY.
Yeah.
And your website is ephemeralnewyork.wordpress.com. Again, we'll link to all that at angryhistory.com. But it's that good that if you're a history person, you want to tweet out everything.
Oh, it's really born out of my love and fascination with New York City. Technology now, you can, you know, you don't rely on a publisher to kind of get your thoughts and your emotions, you know, out there to find an audience. You can set up a website yourself, and that's really what I did. Without any kind of plan or any aim for it, just as a way to sort of share my love of the city and the little corners and pockets of mystery and beauty that we find every day when you look around.
And the book, Owen and I pre-ordered ours, sitting here on the table. It comes in a Victorian-style box labeled New York City in 3D in the Gilded Age. And it's really unlike any box set I've seen. It's kind of a time machine with the stereoscope inside. Describe what people get when they pick up the book.
Well, you get a real book. So there's an actual book just about the Gilded Age with wonderful pictures, very rarely seen images from the fantastic archives at the New York Historical Society. You also get 50 stereoscopes, very rare images, also from the New York Historical Society library, and a stereoscope to view them through. These are stereographs, and if you have an interest in photography, you've probably seen them. They're late 19th century sort of hardback cardboard photos, and it looks like there's two images side by side on the piece of cardboard. When you look through the stereoscopic viewer, it actually comes to life as a 3D image. And this was pretty neat for 19th century people in the 19th century. It was a new way to see the city and the world. It was a very popular pastime to collect and view them.
When Owen and I, anyway, were growing up in the 70s and probably in the 60s, they had the ViewMaster, which was kind of similar to the stereoscope. I was wondering, I know the book is brand new, but have you had any reaction from young people who today, and in kind of an era of iPhones in modern time, have ever looked at one?
The reaction is, wow, cool, which is pretty neat because they are cool. They are a little bit like the ViewMasters. I had many of those growing up too. But when I look through it and I look at the images, I like to imagine myself, you know, as somebody from the Gilded Age looking at these for the first time, and things really come to life. And this is the first time that people were able to look at a 3D image. And this is before movies, before TV and everything. And this was kind of like the first quasi-motion picture entertainment. It was very popular.
So you heard it here first, New York City in the Gilded Age, ideal for children.
They yeah, should be... kids seem to really like it, actually. You know, kids love those gadgety things.
Yeah.
And this is a new one. Not too many kids have stereoscopes, you know.
I think when you get to be a certain age, anything that's retro, it's always has some kind of appeal. And I think if that's how you turn kids on to the past, obviously it's a big mission of ours, and you with Ephemeral New York at the website, if this is how you turn them onto it, I could see if I was a kid staring at that for a long time, because I've spent a lot of time digging for pictures of this era, and a lot of these really are new. They're not ones you're just going to find tossed around on various websites when people want to get things wrong about the Gilded Age.
Yeah, we were pretty careful to make sure that we selected images for the book and also for the stereoscopes that had not been out there and were rarely seen, if ever seen. So there's some pretty good stuff.
Seems like it's a good introduction for those poor souls, as TR might have called them, who have never visited this vibrant period of Tenderloin bars and Tammany Hall. So who did you have in mind for picking it up? What kind of people are you getting a reaction from now that it's out?
Well, definitely from New Yorkers, whether they're native New Yorkers or they just moved here 2 years ago or they're relatively new, they seem to love it. I mean, it really gives this sense of the city. At the time, the city really coalesced into the modern city that we know it today. Not just the geography of the city, but kind of the idea of being a New Yorker really came about in the Gilded Age. And then anybody who just loves history and, you know, can't pass up a black and white photo without looking at it and wondering, you know, who are these people? What was this building? Who lived here? What was life like? I really tried to not just present kind of a linear history, but to really give a feel for how people in the Gilded Age lived of all classes, what they did work-wise, what they did for pleasure and leisure. And I hope that readers get a sense of just day-to-day life. What were the comforts in your home, if you were lucky enough to have them? Where did you shop? What did you eat? What was in the newspaper at the time? That kind of day-to-day living is what I'm interested in as a person who loves history, rather than kind of the linear, you know, this was invented then, and then this was invented then, which is kind of how history is presented in school when you're a kid, which is why I think a lot of kids don't like history.
Yeah, it just becomes memorizing yet another thing. And for us, we've said many times when we started wanting to do this history show, you want to take dusty pictures from history and say these people weren't just, you know, that 2 seconds that somebody sits there in a chair in Matthew Brady's studio. They had happiness and sadness and joy, and their stomachs hurt when they ate too much or when they drank too much, even Grover Cleveland's case maybe, or, you know, any of these people. Like, they had real lives. And you look at some of these pictures in your book, especially now with the stereoscope, ways you can't look at it at home, and it really brings that home. They can almost step out of the picture and tell you a story, even though it might be the only time in their life they ever had their picture taken. Especially the kids, they mugged for the camera immediately in a way that the adults were still kind of Victorian, most of them, I guess. You know, but the kids are still very vibrant paper boys and such.
Oh yeah, it's great. And what makes it really easy to relate to is the fact that the geography of the city that we know today with Broadway and the avenues and then the street grid was really all in place. So it's very easy. You know, you're not just looking at a street that doesn't look familiar. You can easily say, wow, that's Broadway. These people are shopping on Broadway, or they're going to the theater. They're getting a cab. It's a horse-drawn cab, but it's still a cab. And that's how we live in New York today. It's very easy to relate to, and it's fascinating how things have changed, but the life in the city has not changed that much. Sort of the day-to-day routines that people had. They were all established by the Gilded Age.
And consolidation was only at 1900, so it's really the dawn of Greater New York. They don't say Greater New York so much anymore, but at least when I was a kid, they still said it some.
Yeah, it's great, too. The story of consolidation I find fascinating because they first introduced the idea in the 1860s, and then in the 1880s, it really started to gather steam, mostly because the Brooklyn Bridge really linked the cities of Brooklyn and Manhattan together. But Brooklyn held out. They held out for a long time until finally in the 1890s, you know, they accepted. And then the night before consolidation was to take effect, which I believe was January 1st, 1898, the Brooklyn Daily Eagle, the daily paper of the city of Brooklyn, wrote something about this is Brooklyn's funeral. But in its place of the city of Brooklyn, we have the borough of Brooklyn and the city of Greater New York. You know, it was all born in the Gilded Age.
We kind of put quotation marks around angry in the idea of Angry History Show. And it's sort of those historical facts we get passionate about. And so I wanted to ask you if you have one of those misconceptions that comes up a lot about the Gilded Age or just a general history thing when you tell people you do Ephemeral New York that kind of gets you going in a 5-minute speech. I know, for instance, people that confuse the Roosevelts. I was at Sagamore Hill one day, and I heard a woman asking her husband if he was the one in the wheelchair. And
how can you confuse the Roosevelts? That's crazy. But I think that people think Gilded Age means that everybody was having a great time. It was just a grand old party. Money's coming in. The city is booming. Becomes, you know, essentially the financial capital of the nation and one of the financial capitals of the world. There's balls. There's high society. And I think when people think Gilded Age, they think of that. And that's all true. But you also had two very, very deep recessions, panics, they called them at the time. And you had so many immigrants coming in with nothing. And the poverty was tremendous. And there was no safety net as we know it today. There was no, I guess, what we would call welfare. There was no food stamps. You weren't totally on your own. You had benevolent societies and you had religious groups and ethnic groups. And you also had, you know, corrupt Tammany Hall politicians ready to, you know, give people a little money to buy their vote. The flip side of the Gilded Age was, you know, it was pretty bad. There was some pretty deep poverty and a lot of suffering.
In fact, the term Gilded Age wasn't that Mark Twain, and it was sort of with some sarcasm to
it. Right, exactly. Gilded meaning gilded on the surface and, you know, rotten at the core. But we kind of sometimes forget that.
Well, with the pictures in the book, you get a pretty broad cross-section. It's easy to overlook it because, for instance, you don't really see pictures of those horrible outhouses that would serve an entire block. But you can find them if you choose to look. You spared us that in New York City in the Gilded Age. One book that people are probably familiar with, at least the title, is How the Other Half Lives by T.R.'s friend Jacob Riis. In fact, when Theodore Roosevelt read that book, he sent Jacob Riis a card over at the New York Sun and said simply, "I'm here to help." And so that's how they got to be friends. But he was a groundbreaking photojournalist who came with nothing, literally, you know, tried to stay in one of these houses and you know, saw the misery of it and really tried to change it.
Yeah, and I think that people today generally acknowledge that a lot of those photos were a bit posed, perhaps. At the same time, you know, so what? It still tells us how deep the poverty was and that, you know, how many, what they called at the time, street Arabs, meaning homeless kids, there were out there, and how bad things were for a lot of the people in the Gilded Age.
And in fairness to Riis, first of all, the technology had to pose some of them, but also if he seemed to overstate any of that, he actually understated it in his headline, because it probably would have been more like the 2/3 that were living in the tenement, and maybe a third that had servants and whatnot. So he probably a little bit understated it there. But it gave rise to a lot of things like parks. I was going to mention that Sarah Delano Park's not far from here. That would have been all tenements, and it sort of created this movement to make urban space more livable.
In fact, when they opened Seward Park, which was not the first playground, but one of the first playgrounds, Jacob Riis was there, and he spoke. There were thousands of kids like waiting for him to stop speaking so they could just get in the playground, but he was such a big reform movement leader at the time that he came to actually witness the birth of the playgrounds and the parks and other progressive reforms of the era.
And I think I might have stepped on your answer when I asked you about, does anything get you worked up when people ask you, is there a common misconception that somebody tells you, or even just a thing you're really passionate about that you love to talk people about? Like Sarah Vowell says, when she goes to weddings, she'd find herself saying, don't bring up McKinley, don't bring up McKinley. So do you have any things like that?
I'm always surprised, or also surprised, to hear about the incredible benevolence on the part of many of the richest New Yorkers. I'm not saying that they are saints or anything like that, but you have someone like Louis Fleischmann, who was a very rich bakery owner. His family actually ended up developing Fleischmann's yeast, which is in the supermarkets today. He had a fancy Viennese bakery on 10th Street and Broadway, and he was the first person who started a bread line in which he ran for 40 years, and for many of those years personally supervised giving away the bread that hadn't sold for the day to any hungry man who was willing to queue up online and wait for it. And that's how we got the term bread line. And he took a lot of heat for that, because the prevailing idea at the time among a lot of people in New York was that you don't give out charity. It's okay to help people, but you have to ask for something in return, either work or you might charge a few cents. And his answer to that was, these men are hungry and that's enough for me.
Do you have a favorite picture in your book?
There are so many photos and images in this book that I love. I'm so happy that they made it in the book and we didn't have to cut any. But I would say that my favorite is, we have this wonderful photo of the very rich wife of one of the Vanderbilt sons. Her name is Alice Vanderbilt. And she was attending a ball and wore an electric dress. And the electric dress is so wild. You know, at the time, it was a wild thing. I mean, she had a battery pack and it lit up. And it was really to celebrate the idea that we had this thing called electricity. We had light. We weren't relying on dirty, stinky gas lamps anymore. And I love it because it's so ostentatious and so out there, but it just symbolizes, this is the Gilded Age, kind of brought the light to New York City.
That is great. Again, the book is New York City in the Gilded Age. You can get it in the box set, complete with a stereoscope, which many of you, I'm willing to bet, have never seen or tried to use.
It's cool. You got to check it out. It's pretty cool.
It really is. It's fantastic. And I'm going to ask you to sign my book, so that'll be great. I appreciate you doing that. I appreciate you so much making the time right before your book launch at the museum at Elder Street. Good luck in your launch party and with the book.
Thank you so much, and thank you again for coming out. It's been great talking to you, fellow Gilded Age lover.